They get that worked out ahead of us. That's more valuable than Star Wars. The earth, by that view, is seen as a crystalline structure reflected up through PowerPoints on a dual system of geometric figures. 12 pentagons and now we're to Rennes Le Chateau. 12 pentagons and 20 equilateral triangles. That cover the earth and have significant intersections in the Bermuda Triangle, which includes Bimini, have significant intersections at Giza, where the pyramid sits in Egypt, and have significant intersections in Peru. Am I boring you? These and other intersections also happen to be maximal points of solar radiation and the centers of the unexplained magnetic inconsistencies on the Earth. This planetary grid system's lines appear to coincide with weather patterns, including hurricanes, mid-oceanic ridges, and the edges of the continental plates, which are drifting, by the way. For example, as a vessel crossed the Puerto Rican Trench during a Caribbean voyage, a sensitive, as a medium, independently identified a magnetic anomaly identified by instruments aboard. Now, this writer obviously believes in parapsychology. During my own investigations, one of the sensitives, a graduate student at my university, told me that her sensitivity was dramatically enhanced whenever she visited her mother's home in West Texas. At length, consulting a magnetic survey map, she found that the spot where her mother's home was located was characterized by strong magnetic anomalies. John Mitchell's excellent study, City of Revelation, enumerates several components of megalithic sites, among them, one, an astronomical orientation and a location in relation to other sites and terrestrial indicators such as mountains and magnetic fields. Two, numerological features expressed in dimensions and layout. Number three, systems of geometry corresponding to significant numbers and reflected in the ground plan of the temple. The first criterion at Stonehenge, for example, is covered by its lunar and solar sighting arrangements. Its situation on lines of magnetic force within the Earth and its relation to underground watercourses. The second criterion is satisfied when the site includes the number 6. Remember, when I was on the numbers of Stonehenge, I stopped when we got to the 6. I have more to say to you about that after a little more broader background. The number 6 is related to inorganic structures such as crystals. Maybe I ought to bring the book out, The Crystal Skull, again. The second criteria, numerological features expressed in the dimensions and layout, of Stonehenge is satisfied when the site includes the number 6, which it does, and I paused at that, the number 5, related to organic life, the spiritual and esoteric number 7, sacred in many cultures, and the 12 of the lunar cycle. For the third and final criterion, systems of geometry corresponding to significant numbers and reflected in the ground plan of the temple, geometric figures related to these numbers just said, such as the circle, square, cross, triangle, hexagon, pentagon, others may be found in the ground plan of Stonehenge, had we pursued it a bit further when we were just scratching the surface the other night. Well and good. Here's a map of the planetary grid of identified energy high spots around the globe. North and South America, notice it's hitting Vermont. Notice it hits right here in the plateau of Giza, where my cigar is, Peter. Right here, with a number 1 on it. Now the question is, with all this research on megalithic sites above ground, if these stones off Paradise Point on Bimini are underground human erected megalithic sites, they ought to fit some of this criteria. How well, I wondered, would Bimini satisfy the criteria for a megalithic site? The enormous blocks were one indicator, but what of the sacred geometry, the unusual magnetic activity, and the astronomical orientation? Would we be able to find such indicators? The 75 expedition. What are you looking at me like that for? Once again, we had arrived at Bimini after a Gulf Stream voyage, which happily proved milder than our first in 74. John Steele and C.W. Kahn, my diving partners, were as expectant as I for this first day on the road site. For the Poseida 75 crew, the weather looked good. No towering thunderheads or threatening squall lines were to be seen in the distance. And the Gulf Stream's giant weather machine was quiet. This time, we were aboard a 60-foot dive boat, Fosse 3, and C.W. Kahn and I were readying our dive gear for a preliminary look at the site. Even at 9 a.m., the tropical sun was bearing down on us, but we were a bit early for the best light. Despite the clarity of the water, a high angle of the sun was still desirable. Diving from the fosse, we descended to the megalithic blocks below, where I got a bearing on our location. We were now over the long outer row of blocks near the center of the long arm of the J. Somewhere, here's your reverse J, somewhere near the center of the long arm. Swimming in about 15 feet of water, while investigating the block's positions, I suddenly noticed beneath the joining of two of them a fracture in the solid limestone seabed. What was significant was that the fracture did not coincide with or even parallel the joint above it. In fact, the two lines of joint and fracture intersected at about 45 degrees. I beckon CW over to have a look. Taking measurements, we found that the joint between the two blocks was oriented 315 degrees toward the northwest at a right angle to the orientation of the row of stones themselves, which were 45 degrees northeast. Checking the seabed fracture, clearly the work of nature, we found it generally oriented toward 0 degrees azimuth or north. Here's a picture of the fracture underneath the blocks, or a drawing rather. The site of the fracture in the seabed's marked on this picture of the J-arm. Now, this raised some questions. Earlier, geologists attempting to explain the joining pattern of these huge blocks had claimed that natural stresses or tensional joining processes were responsible. If this were so, the joint between the blocks should coincide with the seabed fracture. We had found a possible contradiction of this theory on our first dive. During the expedition, we would find two more identical cases where natural fractures in the seabed bore no significant relationship to the joints of the megalithic blocks. Swimming over another part of the site, we became aware of another phenomenon. A row of four or five blocks seemed to overlap the blocks beneath them. They appeared to have tumbled over and seemed situated in a most unnatural way. Earlier surveys had reported no stones on top of other stones. We found them and photographed them. That evening, after dinner, we discussed our findings, then turned to the more practical aspects of our coming weeks on the site. You don't need any of that. Health suggestions, salt tablets to avoid dehydration, etc. Let's go to the second day. Our second day was as productive as the first. Further south, on the main lead of the J stones, and within a few feet of the square stone, which I showed you a picture of the other night, we found what I call the chalk stone. Its shape, like a section of pie with the apex cut off, reminded me of stones blocking natural chimneys that I'd found on mountain climbs. It also resembled the keystone of an arch. Its central axis ran north and south, magnetic north and south, that is. Looking south, each side opened 30 degrees. This pattern seemed far too orderly to have a natural origin. And as we studied the blocks on the days that followed, the chalk stone soon emerged as a significant part of a geometric pattern extending about 60 feet to the east and about 60 feet up the row of stones to the northeast. I wondered whether this might be a clue to the sacred geometry as described by Mitchell. And here's the chalk stone. One of our most important objectives was to accomplish the first full tape and compass survey of the site, ultimately producing a map of the site based on aerial photography as well. We were fortunate in our timing because the continual shifting of sand had worked in our favor except for one section, much more of the site was visible to us than the year before. Now here's the preliminary survey of the site with the chalk stone taking an important position down here. Most of the blocks were now clearly resting on either the underlying bedrock or on smaller stones on the seafloor. Besides assisting us in our survey, this fact had an important archaeological consequence. It meant that the idea held by some Atlantologists that the blocks now visible were only the top of a more complex structure was likely incorrect. Although it's still possible that lower layers of the structure may have been cemented under the marine limestone of the seafloor, the present site itself is clearly limited to one and sometimes two stones in height. It was becoming obvious to us that we had to have a greater familiarity with the geology of the site and the island, including the processes by which limestone, the principal sedimentary rock, was formed. We also needed to learn about the exact composition of other types of limestone in order to eliminate the immediate area as the source of the giant stones. Existing geological surveys of Bimini did not answer these questions to our satisfaction. The arrival of John Parks brought us the technical expertise we would need to review the geological problems. A young geologist, John was an instructor at a university in eastern Tennessee. The youngest member of his faculty, and to my delight, possessed considerable artistic skill. In the water, he was a certified scuba diver. On board, John was particularly helpful in updating my 25-year-old undergraduate geology. Chapter 5, Bahamian Geology, the Stones Begin to Speak. Too hot in here now. In our research, am I boring you? We were investigating the makeup of the main unit of the Bahamas, the Great Bahama Bank with the Bimini Group in its northwestern corner, and Andros Island on its eastern edge. To the north, over the deep northwest Providence Channel, is found the Little Bahama Bank. The third bank, to the west of the other two, is Quesal Bank, mostly submerged. The entire archipelago includes 700 islands in an area of about 40,000 square miles. I don't want to bore you. It gives a very careful analysis from bedrock to the upper layers of the stones in and around Bimini. From the coarser limestone, abundant in fossils, through beach rock to a marine limestone, all of which vary considerably from the megalithic blocks. The marine limestone, for example, its grains are much finer and well sorted, with no evidence of the larger grains found in the blocks. It is a biospelsperite, pellets or grains of biological origin cemented by sphericalcite. John Parks, the geologist, immediately busied himself collecting hand samples of the blocks so that later he could prepare thin sections for microscopic analysis. He also probed some of the nearly buried joints between the blocks using a floating water pump, which, though small, produced 100 pounds per square inch at the nozzle. What a water pick. Separating the blocks at one point, he found a narrower joint than between those blocks that had been more exposed to various kinds of erosion. In fact, the joints were so narrow they resembled masonry. We would eventually spend many patient hours underwater in a study of the arrangement of the blocks to see if their structures had more in common with natural formations or with ordered human construction. Late one afternoon, now you probably can anticipate where he's going. Can't you? From a study of the rocks, the blocks are going to be different. And most of those that say, ah, no way, geologic formations, have paid no attention to these geologic stone analyses. And it's just the beginning. Now, you know, Edgar Cayce had prophesied in one of his seances, or trances, that Atlantis would rise from the sea. That can be taken poetically or literally. Near Bimini, near the Bahamas, he prophesied the time. And that was the time that they began to discover these rock formations. And they have risen from the sea, certainly in knowledge. You don't care about any of this? I'm not too sure.